It's the North Shore Vineyard Church audio podcast, and I'm Crispin Schroeder, pastor of North Shore Vineyard. Today on the podcast, we have audio from our Sunday morning service on June 6th in downtown Covington. And on this message, you'll actually get a break from hearing me speak because we have a guy in our congregation named Josh McIntyre who is going to be talking on the subject of stewardship today. So you're in for a good treat. Don't forget to check us out on the web at northshorevineyard.org for resources and various things that our church is involved in. We hope you enjoy this. Thanks for listening.
I've got a message here on stewardship that I want to review. And at the end, I'm going to have like a Q&A session, kind of like you guys did with Crispin a couple of weeks ago. So while you're listening to the message, if you would, I want everybody to kind of participate here. If you could think of a couple of challenges or questions or successes you've had with finances, and if you wouldn't mind sharing it with everybody after. We'll take a few minutes, depending on how quickly we get to the message, seeing how much time we have to kind of share those stories. But just think about some questions, concerns, or successes that you'd like to share with everybody. So for those of you who don't know, I'm in pharmaceutical sales. So my job is pretty much requires me to travel a lot. I go and talk to doctors about why they should use my products over my competitors. I'm on the road quite a lot. But about once a year, we have a meeting where we get together nationally. And it's a way for us to kind of organize and everybody get on the same page. And recently, our CEO, who's been the CEO of our company for about 30 years, did something pretty unconventional. During the meeting, he called up three managers on the stage, and he said, listen, guys, I'm going on a sabbatical. I've been working really, really hard for the last 30 years. I need to take a break. While I'm gone, I'm going to give the first manager, I'm going to give him a $10 million account, and I want you to do with it what you think is best while I'm gone. And then he brought up the second manager and said, I'm going to give you a $5 million account and do what you think is best with that account. And then he brought up the third and gave him a $2 million account. And he did the same thing. So he wrapped up the speech, and he kind of walked off stage. And while he was gone, the managers got to work. So the first manager really got reorganized. He took the sales force and cut expenses and decided that he was going to go in a completely different direction with this account. And over the course of a year, he doubled it to $20 million. And the second manager came on, and this is the one who had $5 million. And he did some reorganization and decided that he was going to interact with the customer in a different way. So he took his sales reps and had them trained to interact in a totally new manner. And he was able to double that account, so brought it up to $10 million. And the third manager did nothing out of fear. He kind of just sat on it and really didn't grow it. He just wanted to maintain it. So a year later, the manager comes back and has a meeting with three of them, and he pulls them in the room, and he says, first manager, what'd you do? And he said, well, I doubled the money. He said, very good. Gave him a promotion. You're a vice president now. Brought up the second manager. He said, second manager, how did you do? He said, well, you gave me $5 million, and it wasn't $10 million, but I was still able to double it. He said, great. Good job. Brought up the third one. He said, well, tell me how you did. He said, well, I didn't do anything. I really, you guys are such shrewd businessmen, and I've seen how you can take nothing and make it into something. Well, I just had a fear, and it really just froze me in my tracks, and I couldn't make any decisions or do anything with the money you'd given me. And he said, you didn't do anything? I mean, you didn't even put it in a bank account? You didn't even earn me any interest? He said, no, I didn't. Well, you're fired. So he fired the first two, he promoted the first two and fired the second one. So if y'all don't realize, this is not true. This is more of a parallel of a story Jesus used on stewardship. It was basically from Matthew 25:14-30, when he gave the pences to each one of the master gave the pences to his servants and told them to go out and prosper with that money. So this is just a modern day parallel to that story. So nobody got fired. Don't worry. What we need to think about here is one of the first questions is, whose money is it anyway that God gives? You know, God blesses each and every one of us here with a certain amount of gifts. And first off, we're in America, right? So we should feel ultimately grateful to have all the gifts we do exponentially beyond any other country in the history of the world. So everybody here is rich in the world standards, right? We agree? Yeah. All right. But at the same time, he gives us money, and we work really hard for that money. We do a good job, and we have to ask the first question is, whose money is it anyway? And most people would say, well, I've never really asked that question because it's pretty obvious. I'm the one that goes to work every day. I'm the one that brings home the paycheck. It's my money, right? And that's a challenge for a lot of us. With stewardship, it's kind of a question of this is a blessing from God? Is this his money or is it my money? And what am I going to do with it? And that kind of sets the paradigm for how we're going to treat the blessings he gives us. So a personal story, I grew up, my father instilled a strong work ethic in me, and he taught me to save. And he did that in a smart way. We lived in a neighborhood on the South Shore that was full of lots. And all my neighbors, the kids, they all had four-wheelers, and they got to ride them around the neighborhood. And my brother and I didn't. We had our bicycles, and everybody else had four-wheelers. And so what my dad did was he decided to set a goal really high for my brother and I. And we were probably 10 or 12 years old at the time. And what he did was he bought a four-wheeler and put it in the garage. And he paid $800 for the four-wheeler. And he says, "That's my four-wheeler, boys. You like it? Oh, yeah, yeah. We can't wait to ride it." I said, no, it doesn't work that way. That's my four-wheeler. If you would like to ride my four-wheeler, then you're going to have to pay for half of it. So he set a goal at a very young age of saving and being good stewards of our monies. And, you know, I would go out and do whatever I could, weed gardens at 10 years old or wash cars or save up the money. My goal was to save up half of half. So $200 was my goal. And it took me 6 months, and my dad never budged from that. That four-wheeler sat in the garage for 6 months. And you know what? I got my $200 before my older brother did. So you can imagine, you know, seeing me ride around the neighborhood. It's a true story. And from that point forward, I really understood money and what it meant to sacrifice. Because as a 10-year-old or 11-year-old, you have this money. It tends to burn a hole in your pocket, right? Can some of us admit to that, doing that today, right? And so he taught me a very good lesson at that point in time. So I really do appreciate what he's given me in that regard. So back to the story. You know, when we look at our lives and the blessings, we can look at, like, two things. One, whose money is it? And if it is God's money, how do I use it to more bless him and his purpose on this earth? So what Jesus actually meant in the story, he actually called that individual who did nothing in the story wicked and lazy. Does that surprise y'all? It kind of did me. It took me back a little bit because I would say, well, this person was just scared. But God was basically saying that it's wicked and lazy not to do good with his money. And that was the kind of the message that he wanted to take home there. And all of us in our lives are given different measures of gifts from God, right? You know, Mary, who just led worship here, she's definitely gifted in music. If I were to be up here, I think there'd probably be about half as many people in the audience now if I were leading worship. Very much a challenge here, my vocal standpoints. But he's given me a good understanding of finances. And I feel like he's given me a true blessing in that regard. But also he gives you a call to response, because just as in the story of the managers, it was what they were given, but also what they did with that money. Remember the first two, they went out and they took risk and they reorganized and they worked hard and they were able to bring back more to God or to their master at the time. So being a good steward of the money takes two things, the blessing and being wise with your money. So how do we do this? You know, we say, okay, well, I realize that what I have is a gift from God and I want to do good with that. So how do we, give me some practical ways. What can we do to be better with our money? And that's what I want to kind of talk about. I'm going to give you all some examples of some things, and then maybe we can have a conversation of some ideas that we have. So the first is to live simply, right? You know, in America, we've gone to credit, right? And I don't know, anybody in here listen to Dave Ramsey? Ever heard of Dave Ramsey? He's a very popular financial Christian advisor, and he's pretty raw with his callers that call in. I mean, when people call in, he doesn't try to soften the blow, and he really kind of meets them where they are, which is he's honest. And you ask for his feedback, and he's going to give it to you. So one thing in America we've learned, when our grandparents were growing up, they wanted something. They wanted a couch or a tractor or a car. What did they do? Save. That's right. What did we do today? Charge it. That's right. So, you know, way back when, the only thing they probably would have charged way back when was maybe a house or a farm, right? They would have gone to the bank and gotten a loan. Other than that, they saved until they had the money. They walked until they had the money to buy the car. And today, we've seen that the items get smaller and smaller and smaller that we're willing to finance. And, you know, to the you're basically the slave is the debtor here in this situation. And God speaks about that in the Bible, about getting free from that. And so now we're at the point where if I want a Coke, I'll charge it. You know, and not only is that, you know, maybe something it's impulsatory where I wouldn't have otherwise bought it had I not had that credit card, but now I owe somebody that money plus interest, plus all my other bills that pile up. So living simply is a good good goal to have. How do we do that? Distinguish your wants from your needs, right? Give me an example of a need. Who has a need in here?
Roof.
Food
and water.
Food and water. Okay. It's pretty basic things. Now give me a want.
Mercedes.
Mercedes. That's right. Not only does he want a car, but he wants a Mercedes. New game system, new toys, new clothes, the cable. The cable is not a need. Some would argue with me, but it's not a need. So we look at it. We got to look at our lives very critically and say, what's a want and what's a need? And don't get me wrong. I have cable. I'm not saying everybody go out and get rid of your cable, but I'm saying, you know, sometimes it takes looking at your finances in a critical eye. So distinguishing your wants from your needs. Stop trying to keep up with the Joneses. You know, we all have propensity to do that. All right? You're somebody at work gets a new computer, you get a new computer. My computer was working fine. Neighbor gets an iPod, I like the iPod. It's really nice. I think I need to get an iPod now. Neighbor has a new swing set, I need to get the new swing set. So we see how keeping up with the Joneses can kind of cause us to spend more money than we might ordinarily spend. And trust me, you don't want to be the Joneses, because the Joneses are typically going to be in debt themselves, right? So we actually have a video on the Joneses.
I'm Stanley Johnson. I've got a great family. I've got a 4-bedroom house in a great community. Like my car? It's new. I even belong to the local golf club. How do I do it? I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. I can barely pay my finance charges. Somebody help.
So, you know, that could describe, you know, the general theme of America. Now, I think since the recession, or whatever they're calling it now, hit, you know, we've seen some people start to revert back to savings and getting back to the core values. But at the same time, it's hard. You say, I want to be a good steward of my money, but I'm in debt. How do I get out of debt? And that's one of the things that we'd like to help you with a little bit. You know, you'll hear, I continually drive down the road and I hear these people saying, get out of debt, get rid of your mortgage. You know, I'm going to show you how to do this, this, and this. It's no secret. There's no secret formula to getting out of debt, or no secret formula to saving more. It's pretty simple. And I'll give you an example of a budget. And we'll kind of walk through the power of a budget in a minute. And then the next thing is, how many people in here would like to give more? Just by show of hands. Give more. So, you know, and that's a challenge. How do you give more when you don't have the money, right? How many people would like to be in that situation where they could give more? Obviously, yes. I see that. But let's get you there. So how do we do that? One of the situations is kind of looking fine-tunedly at your own budget and your own finances. Giving is important. You know, it's one of those things that I think makes us all feel better. There's been times in my life where I've given, and there's been times in my life where I haven't given. And I've always felt like God's blessed me more when I'm giving. And that's not the reason why you give. But I've seen that in my life, the differences of not just financial blessings, but blessings in general. And actually, Crispin mentioned something a couple weeks ago, about giving a chance. Y'all remember what that was? It's a money-back guarantee, where if you commit to give a certain amount for over 3 months, after 3 months, if you're not happy, more happier than when you were before you started giving to the church, then he'll give you all your money back. So it's a kind of a risk-free trial, I guess you'd say, on giving. And the next thing is seeking counsel. You know, sometimes when we're having trouble with our finances, it can be really hard to look at the finances. You know, if it's a train wreck, you may not want to look very deeply into that issue, because it doesn't make you feel good, and it's kind of hard to look critically at that. So if you have any questions or concerns, always seek counsel from a professional or a friend, somebody who's good with money. You can, at the end of this, there's I think on your handouts, there's my email address. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to email me. I'm not a financial planner, but I do understand money and how money works in the general senses. So I might be able to kind of walk you through some things. I've helped some people, family members and friends with some of these things in the past. And there's, again, there's no magic trick to it. It's just simple. We sit down and kind of go through a budget and look over what's coming in versus what's going out. And then also, if you're trying to save more, you can do one of two things. You can earn more money or you can spend less, right? You can always try to earn more money. Be creative. You know, think of what you can do. Where are your skills? How could you put that into a situation where you could actually make some money? You know, cutting an extra yard on the side, picking up a second job, a weekend job. You know, that can get your money flow coming in a little bit better. But also on the reverse side, spending. Obviously, we're going to talk about budgetary issues. And the general rule is, what we like to live by is the 80-10-10. Does anybody know what the 80-10-10 is? What is that? There you go. There you go. Man, you guys are very interactive. I love this. You know, the more y'all talk, the less I have to talk, so it's real easy. So now, on the budget side, how many people here have, just by show of hands, have created a budget? Household budget. Okay. All right. So we've got probably about a third to a quarter of the individuals here that have a budget. Was that budget easy to make? No. No, it wasn't. Was it even harder to live by? So I kind of picture a budget in my head. You can make the budget, but actually living the budget is like building the Taj Mahal. I mean, it's a very big task to take on. And I can tell you, I very rarely hit my budget. In a given year, I have a budget every month that I try to hit, and I'm very rarely hitting that budget because there's always something that comes up, right? There's always those one time a year things that come up. The tires on the car, a sick kid, a gift, whatever it is. It's just this one time thing. Which you've got to actually plan for some of that along the way. So budgets can be very difficult to live by. Budgets, you know, it's important to have a budget because it's a target, right? If you don't have a budget, you don't have a target, you're certainly never going to hit anything. And that's what a budget is. It's an outline or a target. Not that you've got to be exact, but you know, you make $100 a month, that's your income. You can plan that, and then you subtract out, what do we know we're going to have incur every month? We're going to have rent, or we're going to have a mortgage. We're going to have electricity bill. We're going to have some consistent bills, like a cell phone or a cable bill, something that doesn't vary. And you put those fundamental cornerstones into your budget. And then you're going to have some variables, right? And you plan for those variables. You say, well, in a given month, on the average of the last year, I've spent, you know, out of the $100 that I earn in a month, I've spent three of those dollars on incidentals that just pop up, whether it's fixing the car or fixing something out in the house. And that's how you build your budget. So you come up with what you know you're absolutely positive about, and you put in on the expense and the revenue side, and then you build in those variables. And that way you have an idea of what you're going to come in with at the end, whether it's $5 left out of that $100 or $3, you're going to know, and you're going to hit that budget, or you're more likely to hit that goal. So Dave Ramsey has a wonderful book. It's called The Total Money Makeover. Has anybody ever read that book? All right. What'd you think about it? Yeah. Was it pretty challenging? Yeah, it does. When my wife and I first got married, I was raised by a very financially conservative father, and I learned a lot of the principles that Dave Ramsey talks about. But my wife and I, we were kind of raised differently on finances, and when we got married, somebody gave us a gift, and it was that book. And on the inside of the book, they wrote, "This will change your life." And it did, because what we did was we bought this book, a very simple read, and we went through it a chapter a night together. And I don't know if you've ever tried to build the Taj Mahal by yourself, but it's a whole lot easier to build it with a second person. And that'd be your spouse if you have one. So that's something to make sure that if you're going to read it, you both get on the same page and read it. And he's got some challenges. I mean, it probably took me 5 years to accept some of the things that he asked you to do in there. But even if you're only kind of hitting on a few of the things. You know, he's very much a no debt type of person, a no credit type of person. His credit zero, he'll tell you, is zero. Now, this is somebody who was totally in debt. He was millions of dollars in debt. When people call in and say, I'm $300,000 in debt, he says, that's nothing. I've done that with zeros on the end. You know, so he's been there and back, and he shares a story with you. So this isn't a Dave Ramsey sermon, but it's just another resource that's out there for you guys. So I guess at this time, if anybody has a success or a question or a concern about finances, it's always good to kind of share amongst your cohort. So
I had a question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, yes, and that's a real good point there, because you can create the budget. If you never look at it, it's not going to do a thing for you. You have to live the budget on a monthly basis. So a budget, you know, in my mind, and this isn't, I don't always do it the right way, but ideally what I would like to do with my budget is put it up on the wall, share it with my family, say this is the goal, and then intermittently throughout the month check and see how we're doing. How much money do we have left in this folder? You know, we pull out cash from miscellaneous every month, and I know if it's gone because I go to the little envelope and there's no more money left. So if I'm halfway through the month and I go to the folder and there's no money left, I know we're over budget at that point in time. But it's really kind of checking yourself along the way. So a good rule of thumb is to build a budget and then check it at the end of every month and see how you did, and you can see the difference. Right, and then you can adjust. And it takes a couple of months to adjust and build a budget. You can't build a budget in 1 month because, you know, your goals and aspirations may be great, but reality is a different thing. But what it helps you do is realize where you're deficient in certain areas, and you can adjust in those areas and squeeze. You know, there's, you know, only so many dollars on everybody's paycheck. You're best appropriating that money. And it's basically giving a plan to your money, not letting your money happen to you, but you controlling your money. So, good question. Does that answer it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to share with Judy and I do that, and I think it's been pretty successful. We've taken the budgeting idea, I guess, a step further. We have what we call a reserve account. And for the odd things that come up, like cars and vacations and property taxes and things that aren't monthly expenses, we budget for those too. And we set aside money every month. We're very much no debt people. And so every month we set aside some money in our vacation budget, and every month we set aside some money for our possible new car budget. And until, you know, if it comes vacation time and we want to do something, we don't spend any more than what's in the, than what we've set aside in the reserve account for vacations. And we then take a vacation within the budget.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's planning for the unexpected or the yearly expenses on a monthly basis. So he's saying, you know, my property taxes are $1,200 a year. I'm going to put $100 a month into this folder. I'm not going to touch it. So when property taxes come due at the end of the year, I've got it taken care of. And he does that for every different part of his life. And that's a budget. That's living a budget. And that's not easy to do. Because how do you organize? You know, sometimes your money goes into one bank account and you don't have 15 different bank accounts. Well, you keep track of that on your sheet of paper on your budget. So
we actually have two bank accounts. We have a checking account that we use for the routine expenses, and that reserve account we actually have as a separate account.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Good success. Thank you. Go to Brian first. Yeah, yeah, because, you know, yes.
When you go to buy a new car or a new house and they do need to take out that loan, they look at your credit score because you've never had a credit card or any loans, and they say, well, you have no credit, we can't give you a loan.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's called a I love credit score is your FICO score. Yeah, that's a good question, because if you don't want to use credit, how do you build credit? So when it comes time to buy these things, Dave Ramsey actually has a network of lenders that don't base it off the FICO score. They'll loan to you not based off of that. But what I'll tell you what I did. I've never lived on credit either, but I can tell you what happened with me was I opened up a credit card. Credit card, your FICO score is based on history, right? Successful history, not having any marks against you. So what I did in college, I opened up a credit card, used it. I bought groceries once with it, paid it off, and left it open for 6 years. And so during that time, I had, when I went to go get a loan for my house, I had a 6-year credit history that was good. I never used credit, but and that's a good point, because you do need credit at some point in time for the right things. You know, anybody ever read Rich Dad Poor Dad? You know, the author in there talks about buying assets versus liabilities. He says he never finances a liability. Liability is anything that depreciates in value. An asset would be defined as something that grows in value. So if you follow that rule of thought, you would not want to finance a car, but you would finance a house, because a house would go up in value versus the value of that car would depreciate, but your payment would always be the same. So, yes. Yeah.
You look good today. I'm going to say, ah, this old girl. Much less receive bountiful blessings from God. And the second thing is, I went back to, I call it the old West. You know, if you ain't got the gold nugget, you can't get the merchandise. And though I use credit cards, they get paid off at the end of the month. But if I don't have the money, I don't buy it. I'm in more of a non-traditional business role. I own my own business. It's a very different type of business. I breed thoroughbred racehorses, which nowhere in the world do they fall into the category of needs.
So yeah. Actually, that's number 972 on the list.
So, you know, when the economic downturns happen, obviously we're greatly affected.
Sure.
And also, you know, you mentioned about financing a house as an asset. Well, that just proved to be not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Yeah, what somebody's willing to pay for it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so though the bank has it listed on their books at 675, and you have it listed on the market for 500, and you're not getting a tick on it.
Yeah. Well, let me.
It's not worth 675.
Yeah, and those are some good points. You know, as far as the blessings, receiving the blessings, you know, obviously you can look at. Look at where the world wants to come financially. You know, America is very blessed. It's the land of opportunity, where a lot of people come with nothing in their pocket and can make a lot of themselves. On the economic downturn, obviously, yes, you know, your income is going to be affected by, you know, it being not a necessity in somebody's life. And the financing on the house, I guess there's two different views on the home. The home is a necessity. I mean, you've either got to have a place to live renting or owning or some setup. So as long as you're not looking at it as – I guess you couldn't look at your own personal home as an investment, but more of a need. You know, and, yeah, you know, certainly assets go up and down in value all the time. So I think a lot of people have been caught in different parts of the financial downturn, whether – you know, my industry has been contracting for 7 years. And another company just laid off 5,000 people last week. So there's risk in anything we do, especially in an economic downturn. So I think it's best just to plan accordingly. You know, living below your means, not at your means or above your means. Saving for that rainy day. Looking around how you could be more prosperous. Because I think God wants to bless us so we can bless His church, right? And if we're in a financial struggle, then we're less able to help other people. And I think that's the take-home message here, that we want to be good stewards of God's money so we can go and bless others. And not that anything I'm saying is gospel, because it's not. Don't get me confused. A lot of what I'm saying is what I've learned over the years, and I look young, but I do feel like God has blessed me with a good financial understanding, a good fundamental, basic conservative value on finances. So I think it's just something that we've got to kind of look at. Sometimes we don't want to look at our finances or our financial situation, and us digging a little bit deeper will sometimes help clear the air a little bit. So, what else? please go. Yes, very good point. Very good point.
Josh, could you touch on going from a really nice income to like half?
Yeah. Well, gee, that's easy to do. No, well, you know, certainly we can't plan for everything, right? And that would be on the income side or the revenue side of our budget. When it gets cut in half, certainly adjustments need to be made. And a lot of times it's hard adjustments, and it can be life-changing adjustments. So income gets cut in half. We can do one of two things. We can find another way to make money or make more money, or we can cut our expenses. But we can't live in that deficit. We certainly can't live in that deficit indefinitely, right? So that is a challenge. And if that's something you want to talk with me later on, we could talk about specifics on some things that we might be able to look at and do. Again, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not saying I do, but sometimes it's good just to sit down with somebody and talk it over and look at the numbers and put them on paper. Because a lot of times when I find I talk to people, I ask them about the budget, and I find that they have not done that yet. They haven't gotten to that point where they know exactly what all their expenses are and what their income's going to be. And that's the first thing we do. We sit down, we talk, and I ask them to come back with what, or we'll work it out right there, of what their budget is. It's, you know, pluses and minuses. So is that where you...
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not always addressed. The thing that they talk a lot about is how to get rich, but not how to survive.
Yeah, that's right. And this is, granted, this topic is not an easy topic to talk about. Somebody's going to get upset, and somebody's going to be offended by some of the questions or answers we have in here. And that's just a reality, because it's money, it's sensitive, sometimes it's very personal. And I just think sometimes talking about some of these things can help some people out. So, yeah, case in point, that's a big change in your life. And obviously you guys adjusted, but maybe there's some more adjustments. And, you know, Dave, I listen to Dave Ramsey a lot. And not that he is, you know, he's a Christian, not that his word is biblical, but he's got some very good common sense questions. I'll tell you one case in point. When people call in to tell you that he's in debt, the first thing he asks about is what kind of cars they drive. And you can imagine people who have very nice cars, who are used to those nice cars, and they also have a nice payment to go with it, but they get very defensive. You know, and some people get angry and say, well, we're not going to do that. And he says, well, don't call my show. So, you know, and I have my brother's father-in-law will say, oh, I don't like that. He tells people to sell their cars and get rid of their debt and then buy a clunker and, you know, drive a $2,000 car, and they're going to break, and their wives are going to break down on the side of the road. And I say, well, that's not the case. It's not long-term that he's saying to make a sacrifice. It's make a sacrifice, like Al said, until he has enough money to buy that car. So let's say you have a car payment that's $400. I think the average today from Smart Money is $467 a month is what the average car payment is. So if you were able to sell that, and a lot of times you can't because you owe more than it's worth, just like the house, but if you were to take a loan out, take and pay that bank off and sell the car and you're even, scrape together a couple $100, $1,500 and buy a car. Imagine paying yourself that $467. How long would it take you to save up $3,000 for a car, buy a little bit nicer of a car, but yet you owe it. You don't own the bank anything. And you do that over and over again. And you drive that $3,000 car for 3 years. During that time, always paying yourself $467 a month, your bank account will grow enough to where you'll be able to buy a nicer and a nicer car as you go along, and breaking down the side of the road won't be an issue anymore. So we're not talking about long-term sacrifices forever. There's actually a means to the end here, which is sacrifice today for the benefit of tomorrow, just like our grandparents always did. So. Any more questions? All right. Well, y'all had some good questions. I really do appreciate y'all letting me come up here and talk about this today. And again, this is a hard subject for everybody to talk about, so I appreciate everybody's honesty here. So if y'all would join me in a word of prayer here. Dear Lord, we thank you for all your many blessings that you've given to us, Lord. And we just ask you to speak throughout the week to us on this message and just speak to us and let us know how to be better stewards of your money, Lord, and so that we might bless your church. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.